Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Pop Culture Ninja. I'm Nathan Bell. Sitting across from me, Nathan Bartlebaugh. Nathan, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing very well, Nathan. How about yourself?
Doing great, man. I'm excited about what we're going to be talking about tonight. We're actually going to dive right in. Real quick word, though, don't forget, we are going to be making our announcement for our winners at the end of this podcast.
Right, yeah.
So we're going to have three winners from our Facebook, and we're going to have three winners from our Twitter. So stay tuned for at the end of this podcast to find out who those are going to be.
We got some cool prizes to give away there.
We do, yeah. Really excited. Guess it'll be 2 weeks ago now, we posted a picture on Facebook, Twitter, both on Pop Culture Ninja and on These Go to 11 about what those prizes look like. And those are the actual prizes that we're going to be giving away. So we're going to, we're going to choose three to give away, and hope you guys enjoy. But tonight we're talking about all things X-Men.
Mutants.
That's right. We're talking about X-Men. Last week, Nathan had the opportunity to go see X-Men Apocalypse. We're just going to tell you there aren't going to be any spoilers coming out in this one. I have not seen it. And so what we're going to do, which is kind of unique, Nathan, this was your idea. I'm going to just ask you questions about the movie, very specific questions about the movie, and you're going to answer them without going into any spoilers if you can. What we're going to do right now is we're going to talk about the X-Men kind of in a chronological order of why don't we do a release date order?
That would make the most sense. I think that that's the way to go. Of course, what we're talking about is the X-Men movies specifically.
Yes. Yeah. So the first one that came out was back in 99.
Correct? 2000. 2000. Summer 2000.
Okay.
Yeah.
2000. Summer of 2000. First X-Men movie. I remember when I first saw the cast and the lineup of who was coming in. I wasn't really familiar with a ton of people. I mean, you had Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen, obviously, who were bigger names at that point.
And Ian McKellen actually was probably mostly known in more of like indie art house circles.
Yes.
Because he had only been cast as Gandalf.
That's right.
At that point. Most people were like, Sean Connery should have had it,
Right.
And of course, later he wowed us all.
Yes.
But I think most people knew him from probably smaller works like Gods and Monsters and Richard III.
Yes.
More than
Apt Pupil.
Yeah, Apt Pupil. We have Brian Singer, who,
yep,
who did the first X-Men.
Yep. But I remember my biggest disappointment, this was pre-watching that movie, okay? So before people jump all over me for saying, what, that was your biggest disappointment? This was pre-watching the movie.
Okay.
Was Hugh Jackman being cast as Wolverine. Hadn't heard of the guy, and I was like, wait a minute, Wolverine is like this short, the short, stocky guy who's like all growly and, I mean, what's this guy going to do? He's like 6'4" and I mean, he towers over Cyclops, which, didn't happen in the comics. But I remember coming out of that thing being like, wow, he did an awesome job bringing that character to life, so much so that he's been the longest running superhero character on screen to date, I believe.
In terms of appearances, that's probably right.
Yeah.
Iron Man might be giving him a run for his money.
At this point, yeah.
But in terms of how long, yes. And he was clearly, I think, the revelation coming out of that movie was Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. And the thing with the first X-Men movie is that it came at a time when comic book movies were just starting to get their groove back, just a little bit. And really, there hadn't even been that many. I think that we'd really, in terms of legitimate comic book adaptation, the thing that had started to jumpstart things was the movie Blade just a year before, or 2 years before in 98, which wasn't a huge hit by any means, but it sort of started to capture that visual style that special effects could now achieve that did sort of mimic what a comic book looked like. You had a lot of movies in there at the time, a smaller movie called Dark City. You had The Matrix, of course, that came in between that, that probably really jump-started the desire for people to see kind of the graphic novels on screen. And then you had X-Men, and many of us growing up, probably at that point, like I was in college at the time, I'd just gone to college about the time that the movie came out. But it hadn't been that many years before that I could, you're only talking 5 or 6 years earlier. I was one of those kids reading comics that was dreaming of what this would look like when it got to the big screen. And so there was a part where it almost didn't matter what this movie was when it hit the screen. It was how much did they get right? How much is just seeing these characters on the screen for the first time? So I think it was hard to lay the movie aside, which I actually don't think is really that great as a movie. I think it's not a very good movie. It's not even a very good superhero movie, even I don't think, because it sort of takes the concept of the X-Men, it brings them to the table, and has some interesting pieces to it, but it doesn't really quite get to a story. It ends up with a lot of kind of cheapy superhero battles and stuff that faces them off. I feel like you're watching a bunch of like pro wrestler sort of, you know, Sabretooth is played by a pro wrestler. The fight scenes in the end aren't quite at the level of stuff like The Matrix before it.
Right.
So I didn't love the movie, but there was it was so neat just to see Professor X and Magneto.
Right.
All of those characters, they kind of nailed and gave them a persona that endured. Same thing goes for Wolverine.
Right. Well, and I think, to be fair, throw that out there. When I first saw it, I loved it. I think I saw it in theaters two or three times. I thought there were aspects of the movie in terms of the relationship between Cyclops and Wolverine, particularly in that first movie, they got right, you know, him giving Cyclops the middle finger with his claw and some of that, you know, some of that other humor that was in there. I thought they just nailed between the characters. So to Bryan Singer's credit, I think he did a great job at establishing a movie. Don't get me wrong, I wanted more from it. I wanted to see more from it. But
it was also lower, to be fair, it was lower budgeted than most of the movies we see now. It was definitely a little bit of a gamble, a testing of the waters.
Yes.
What they did nail, I think, maybe better than some of the movies, there's only one other one that I can think of that probably really did this well, was getting that feeling, which is the most important thing to an X-Men movie that matches the comic books, is that feeling of ostracizing and being apart and being different and other, and what it's like to not just have people set you apart, but actually fear you, and to the point that it makes them want to do things that take away your freedom.
Sure.
And that element of the story has always been a piece of the X-Men, so much more so than other superheroes. If you look at most of the Avengers, really, at least the on-screen MCU universe, almost all of them are superheroes by choice.
Right.
Even Hulk is starting to kind of get himself together and make a superhero identity for himself.
Yes.
But Iron Man and most of these guys are all self-made heroes in a sense.
Right.
The X-Men are mutants that have had this forced upon them. And in most cases, it's not even a heroic power unless they make it so.
Right. Yeah. No, that's great observation. So we move in. I guess we're looking at, was it 2002?
2003.
2003.
Summer, May of 2003.
May of 2003. We have X2.
Yeah, that first comes summer out. Movie out of the gate that year.
Yep. I remember going in and seeing that movie thinking, wow, that's what the first one should have been.
Well, he learned a lot between the two movies. And Spider-Man was also in between those two movies.
That was
the second Blade movie. And the other thing that I think this X-Men movie set the precedent for, and I could be wrong, it was one of the first comic book movies, at least particularly in the Marvel branch, to use a very specific comic book storyline. Mm. That's not something... And I think we might have mentioned this last week with the Civil War discussion, or 2 weeks ago with the Civil War discussion, that sometimes the comic books just took the characters and took basic ideas about the characters, basic plot points we all know. Spider-Man's bitten by a radioactive spider. Mm-hmm. Batman's parents are killed in front of a movie theater. You know, things that we know, but not a specific storyline. Just the basic elements, and then they would write a kind of silly, cheesy storyline. That's kind of my issue with the first X-Men. It had a kind of flimsy story. It seemed odd to me that Magneto's great plan seemed to be so much more philanthropic than he normally is. Let's make everybody mutant. So all the people that hate us, let's give them our powers. You know, that could have been a very compelling idea, but it wasn't really well thought out.
Sure.
X2 brings in a popular comic book storyline from the comics, popular characters, and more or less tells that version of the story.
Yeah. I will say my biggest disappointment, and I don't know that they've done anything to correct this, and this is just purely personal, I wanted to see more Colossus in that movie. So
that's right. Colossus only has a few seconds of screen time in that movie.
Yeah. He basically, you know, he comes in and he's, you know, he's
the
like,
assault on I the can school, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, they come in and they try to shoot him. He quickly turns to metal and they can't get through and he pounds them. And it's like, oh my gosh, they're going to do something with him. And then he's like, he goes to Wolverine and he's like, I can help you. And he's like, no, help them. And you don't see him again. It's like,
but it was a nice tease. There was a lot going on in that movie, and
and again, I think my biggest disappointment came from jumping ahead now to X3, which was X-Men 3, I think is what it is.
X3, The Last Stand.
Yeah, which
we this point where we switched directors to Brett Ratner too.
Yes, which because Bryan Singer at that point jumped on to Superman Returns.
Yes,
which. To me, if you had waited for Bryan Singer, you would have had a great movie on your hands.
You would have, at the very least, had a better movie than The Last Stand.
Fair enough. So real quick, you know, and that's where I think my disappointment was I could handle the teaser with Colossus if you had brought in a better scenario with that third movie.
You tease him there and you expect to see him develop.
Exactly.
Yeah, I liked X2, X-Men United, whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. They did a really nice job developing the Nightcrawler character right from the get-go. Singer did a nice job of just etching little bits of his character, his circus performances, his faith, things that are all elements in the comic. And he was able to just hint at them and give you a kind of fuller picture of him. No, I don't think that's true of all the characters in the movie. It tends to be, again, that Magneto, Professor X, and Wolverine, and to some extent Jean Grey in that second X-Men movie, get a lot of the screen time. Again, the battles and the action scenes, to me, there are a lot of Wolverine jumping around and clawing people, and it's weird that in a team of people who are so superpowered, Storm can summon tornadoes, and Jean Grey can do just about anything, you know? And the star player is a guy with blades that come out of his knuckles, you know? It seems a little off there. But I enjoyed it. I still thought there was room to grow, and I think you and I probably both agree that growth didn't happen into The Last Stand. And Last Stand, if we're going to be fair, but I mean, you know, this is online and the internet. Who needs to be fair?
That's right.
But with The Last Stand, I don't think it's as bad a movie as we probably kind of remember it being. In some ways, I think it was trying hard. It almost tried too hard. It moved that metaphor of the otherness and being set apart, and it landed and chose something very specific, which in 2006 was sort of, let's link this to the gay rights movement, which I don't think did anybody any favors at all in the way it was presented. And it really, in terms of the storyline, where it linked this specific thing, they're having, you know, there's a mutant march somewhere in the middle of the movie and things like that, that I think that limited some of the more compelling elements of the story. And it also made something seem very silly and probably even offensive to some people who were now being linked with mutants in a very specific way. But the movie itself was all over the map.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a scene in that movie that some people have tried to defend to me, but essentially it's almost like an Ed Wood level mistake where Magneto takes the bridge, the San Francisco, you know, Golden Gate Bridge, and moves it so they can get onto the island. And he does it in such a way, you're watching him move it, everyone's there, it's the middle of the day, and suddenly they start walking across the bridge. When they get across the bridge, it's night.
It's night,
I mean, that was a really slow walk.
Yeah.
And it's just instantly night, and you're like, that's an odd detail to just in such a big budget movie. But I think that you and I would probably agree that the biggest problem with that movie is that we kind of credit X2 for taking a story that was well-known in the comics.
Yeah.
And it also set up, you talk about teasing Colossus, it teased something even bigger than that with Jean Grey and the Dark Phoenix.
Yeah.
And the Phoenix storyline is a very complex and really good piece of comic book writing. I think if you're talking about great comic book stories, the X-Men had a lot of them. I think that's the kind of problem is X-Men has a lot of really strong storybook telling in the comics, maybe more so than some other comic titles, that they were really story driven.
Yeah.
You get to part 3, it does the Phoenix storyline, completely mishandles it.
Yeah.
doesn't even give Jean Grey a lot to do,
right,
and makes a lot of weird choices, and then just doesn't know what to do with it and drops it.
Right. Well, and I think the problem was by that point, you get to – they try too hard with the Jean Wolverine thing, and they totally miss the fact that, well, in the comics, really, it's Cyclops who's able to tame the Phoenix, not – Wolverine,
yeah,
you know,
and that comes with Jackman being the star player. I think James Marsden really got kind of a bum deal, particularly in that third X-Men movie where he's there and then gone, you know, like very early on. And I think he had a lot of interesting things he could have brought to that character, and he never got the chance, even in the first two.
But
the third was just, egregious in that regard.
Yeah. No, I agree. Now, I will say this. There are two things that I thought it did really well, which every time I go back and watch it, I get more and more
angry. You've gone back and watched it?
I have.
Impressive.
I have. And it, but it's been in light of Apocalypse coming out, and we'll deal with that one down the road. But or not Apocalypse, Days of Future Past.
Okay,
Days of Future Past. So the one of the things that I thought they did well was again the new character they brought in, the Beast, casting Kelsey Grammer. I actually liked that.
It was a nice choice. It felt right. Some of the work and the special effects and makeup of the Beast weren't that convincing. I think also he didn't have a lot to do, which was a shame.
And I agree. Like that end scene, which was his best scene to me. Like, but that end scene really brought out who the Beast was. He's quoting the philosophers as he's fighting, and you know. So to me, that was great. And then at the end, it was so brief, and this is why I'm so disappointed in it. The scene between Pyro and Iceman.
Yeah,
where Iceman fully, you know,
they've been building that for the other movies too.
Yeah, I mean, of course, the cheesy line at the end I thought was absolutely hysterical, where you know Pyro's like, "You should have dropped out of school," and you know, Bobby finally turns into his full ice form and, you know, subdues him and, you know, well, you should have stayed in school and, you know.
Such a goofy movie.
It really is. But in that case, like the line worked. I think it would have been more effective if they had really done a better job throughout the movie at developing those characters and bringing them out more. So then we get a little bit of a break coming in between the two movies. We get X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Yeah, we can move on from that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean...
it was a so-so. It was kind of another movie where they... I think they had taken a breather with everything, and now Marvel's kind of starting, you know, jump-starting its bigger universe. X-Men 3 comes out in 2006 and bombs. You know, it made money, but in terms of bombs, in terms of, like, the fan base that it had...
Right.
...backed away a little bit. Same thing happens the next summer with Spider-Man 3. And so you have them sort of let that go, and then the next summer is when Iron Man comes out. And so in 2008.
Yes.
So actually Wolverine, the Origins movie, came out a year later, but I don't think it was well received at all. I'm not even sure I actually saw all of it.
Oh, okay. See, and what's interesting is I actually, for the most part, I enjoyed the movie. I think it had too many issues. First of all, Deadpool. And,
oh yeah, that's,
you know,
right.
They had a, you know, they had to go back and redo a movie because they so horribly butchered that character.
Okay, the Hulk has come to us three times now, right?
Right, right.
Spider-Man now too, three times.
Yeah, exactly. Now I did think it was interesting, even though this isn't part of the comics, but the whole Sabretooth Wolverine being brothers aspect.
They're not related in the comic books?
No.
I thought, okay.
No, they came together through the Weapon X project.
That's right. They're not biological brothers, but they are sort
they're brothers in arms.
Yeah.
Yeah. For a period of time. It's the Weapon X project, so it's Wolverine,
and they were biologically brothers in the movie.
In the movie they were biologically brothers, yeah. I think they were half brothers.
Okay.
But I thought it did a good job at telling and portraying Wolverine's story. We wanted to know more about his background and what was going on with him, how he lost his memory. I thought it told the story well. Again, like you said, there's a lot of the action that's just kind of dumped in there, but I enjoyed it. It was an entertaining movie, and you have someone like Hugh Jackman who is professionally trained, not just in, you know, movies, but he's done so many theater works, and you know the guy's got a tremendous singing voice, so he's just so well rounded and talented that he could bring that character to life.
The one thing I will say, from what I've seen, and I may have seen the whole movie, I just don't quite remember all of it in terms of origins, is I didn't feel like it really captured the charm that Hugh Jackman has as a performer that he even brought into the other X-Men films. Part of that, though, was it just was so heavily about being an action film.
Sure.
It really didn't give him a lot of, like, grace notes, be those dramatically or comedically. You know?
Yeah. No, and I think that's a fair critique. But, again, after being so disappointed with X-Men 3, to me, that was a breath of fresh air.
I can remember more of X-Men 3 than Wolverine, so I don't know whether that's a good thing or not.
Right.
And then 2011 is when Matthew Vaughn steps in and does X-Men First Class.
Yes.
What did you think about that from a comic book perspective?
Initially, I was not impressed with it.
And like from seeing it or just knowing it was coming out?
Seeing it.
Okay.
So when I first saw it, I was not impressed with it. I thought there were too many things going on there. They're bringing in the whole...
That's the theme of the X-Men movies, too many things going on.
First of all, to me, there was a great opportunity, and I understand why they didn't do it this way, but to me, there was a great opportunity to almost do a little bit of a reboot and to bring in the initial characters. You know, I mean, the initial X-Men, they're bringing in Scott Summers' brother, Havoc, instead of like Bobby, Iceman. And Iceman was one of the initial X-Men. They did something weird with Beast, where he was like this nerdy kid instead of like this hulking guy who, you know, accidentally... I mean, they did show the accident where he turns himself blue and hairy, which was kind of cool.
Nicholas Holt kind of grows into that character, though, I think, over the course of those movies.
I agree. I've enjoyed him as the Beast. But you didn't have Jean still, and you didn't have Cyclops still. And so, to me, it was kind of... It was good in telling an origin story, but there was still something off. I mean, you have Professor X and Magneto, who are supposed to be these best friends who've known each other for years, and really what you have in the scope of it is maybe a month where they're collaborating.
That's exactly
on this.
Right, and like they build that school together. You know, is the idea, and yet that doesn't happen in that movie at all. He's there with him for, like you said, maybe a month. That might even be generous.
Right.
It's been a while since I've seen the movie. And what I liked about First Class is it went back to what I was talking about exploring the idea of being a mutant.
Yeah.
And being a mutant amidst a very specific historical time period that we know of, that it would have been a horrible time to be something like a mutant.
Sure.
Kevin Bacon as the villain, I thought did a great job overall. His character wasn't that well written, but I thought he was rather compelling. I thought that the storyline and weaving it into the Cold War and the Cuban Missile Crisis was initially smart, interesting thing to do. But just as they start to get into who these people are as characters, Michael Fassbender's take on Magneto, I love.
Yep.
It's been a strong point through the entire the second series, if you will, of movies. Some of the things you're talking about, I suspect you will enjoy in X-Men Apocalypse, because there's some of the things that you wanted to see in First Class.
Right.
They do get town down the line. There's even a feeling in this series, and that's maybe because of some of what happens in Days of Future Past, that we could still get those guys building the school together, which I didn't really even... I was watching Apocalypse with no spoilers and realizing, hey, you know, they're leaving a lot of doors open. We could still get some of the things
we want.
It doesn't feel that way at the end of X-Men First Class. The biggest problem with that movie, I like about two-thirds of that movie. The last third this probably is true of most of the X-Men movies, mm-hmm. the last third ends up being this thing where everyone has to kind of choose sides, pick up lines.
Yeah.
Professor Xavier has to get all of his, minus the bald head, get yeah. all of his attributes all in one moment. Everything right. that happens, happens on that beach in a 10-minute span, and it almost doesn't make any sense. But yeah. it's like they got to have everybody leap through the hoops that we expect so they all end up here.
Yes.
And that was disappointing because that movie was tapping into a, I thought, a more interesting take on the X-Men. It wasn't the take I knew from the comics.
Sure.
But in some ways, it was as literate and interesting as what they did in the comics, which is what I kind of want. And I want something that makes me feel like I was reading the comics.
And that's what I've come to appreciate in that movie. That's why, like I said, my initial watch through of the movie, when I first saw it, I remember we went to a friend of mine. It was his bachelor party, and we – you know, he wanted to see the X-Men movie, so we all went to see the X-Men movie. And just my initial impression was being disappointed. But having gone back and rewatched it, I've come to appreciate it more in that vein, like what you were talking about.
I think it's one of the better directed of the movies as well, if you're talking just yeah. purely direction.
So then we run into the Wolverine, which sets the stage. I mean, really, if you're looking at it chronologically, it comes in between X-Men 3 and Days of Future Past.
You're right. Yeah, that's very true.
So in that story, we see Wolverine has fully gotten all of his memories back. He's kind of enters into almost this savage state. He's come off of killing Jean Grey from the third one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a spoiler alert, but if you haven't seen the third one by now, tough.
it wasn't us who spoiled that movie. It was Brett Ratner.
That's right. that one I was pleasantly surprised with because I was not expecting a lot from it. I didn't think it was going to be good.
It had gone through a lot of directors. Like when Darren Aronofsky was on to direct it, it seemed like it was going to be this really neat, different thing. Mm-hmm. Then he went... I think he went from that and did Noah or something.
Oh, okay.
And so you got, I think James Mangold came in and did, who's a strong director in his own right. He did 310 to Yuma, which is a pretty good action film. I liked it too. I mean, it was another movie that completely broke down in like the second half.
Mm-hmm.
Again, there was this idea, particularly with the X-Men movies, I've noticed that they are more content than some of the Marvel or even some DC movies where they're really trying to decipher who these characters are. It seems like they feel like the X-Men movies are much easier to jam into the summer blockbuster spectacle mode.
Sure. Yeah.
And in that, I feel like every X-Men movie kind of always ends with a big confrontation where characters are kind of kicking and punching each other.
Yeah. 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 And that, I agree. I think instead of building the action into the storyline of it, it's, oh, here's kind of our story, and now we're going to throw a fight scene in there.
Because there's some real exploration of his character before that, and you right. do get – he's savage a little bit, but he's also kind of more that melancholy, moody
yes.
Wolverine that was very prominent in the 80s
yes.
That dovetailed nicely into the Dark Phoenix storyline mm-hmm. that was present for a lot of what was going on in the 90s comics when he was with, when his relationship with Jubilee
right.
was, she was sort of that young, peppy, innocent
yeah.
that kind of drew out some of his grumpiness, who I guess was really replaced with Rogue
yeah.
in the first three films.
Yeah. Well, the first two anyway, and the third one, she's kind of disappears too.
She was at the parade.
Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah.
and then we find ourselves coming to Days of Future Past, which to me, I was so excited to see Bryan Singer back on directing an X-Men movie. Actually, I don't think he directed it, did he?
He did.
He did direct it. Okay.
Yeah,
I couldn't remember if he directed
it. He directed this,
and
he's also done Apocalypse.
Apocalypse. So excited to see that. And everything that X-Men 3 got wrong, he got right. I just felt like going back and merging those two worlds together, essentially undoing everything that X-Men 3 had done was, to me, that's what I wanted. And that's why I could go back and watch X-Men 3 now, because when it was just X-Men 3, I think I watched it twice. I watched it once in theaters and I hated it. And I was like, all right, let me give it one more chance just to see if it
you
was really
as
bad.
You are a true fan, Nathan.
I am. I love comic books. So I went back and I watched it again. I was like, no, it really was as lousy as I remembered it. And then after Days of Future Past came out, I could then appreciate that movie in that context. Okay, all this crappy stuff happens that shouldn't happen, but they go back and they fix it in Days of Future Past.
I will say that, and you see some of this in Apocalypse too, that they actually, the X-Men movie universe does have a nice sort of fluidity in the way it flows into itself, given how disparate all its pieces are. Mm-hmm. And that's really down to what Singer's done in Days of Future Past, in Apocalypse, where he's really trying to create a reflexive sort of relationship with all the films.
Yeah.
Days of Future Past probably does that the best. I don't think that it is necessarily a great movie, but its job it was successful at,
yeah,
which was to, again, merge these two universes, bring them together, get the characters you want to see together, and create a jumping forward movement while still being a second movie, like a sequel essentially to First Class.
Yeah.
And it jumps forward a decade. We get the 60s and the paranoia going on. Mm-hmm. Then we get kind of the 70s in X-Men, Days of Future Past.
Yes.
And in that movie, I think we get some really neat, better than the movie as an overall piece, I think there are individual chunks of that movie that are really cool, particularly from the perspective we started talking last week about what it's like to capture a comic book on film.
Yes.
There are two pieces of that movie. There's a battle with the Sentinels in the beginning because
yes,
Days of Future Past takes place in a sort of dark dystopic future world.
Yes.
We're not even sure how future it is because of what's happened and the time frame in which it's happened, but it looks like a broken Terminator-esque kind of world with Sentinels capturing mutants and humans alike and mm-hmm, just killing them. And there's a scene where the X-Men are kind of stumbled upon by these Sentinels who can now grab and adapt the powers of the mutants.
Yes.
And you have scenes that they don't even bother to really explain the powers. They just let you visually see what they are.
Yes.
You know, portals are opening up and tumbling out in almost a three-dimensional use of space that's just like a comic book. You know, you see characters
right,
fighting through the portal that they're also fighting in this other part of the frame on the right side. That was really cool. I really felt that looking at that was like looking at a big comic miasma mm-hmm, on the pages. The Quicksilver scene, they bring
yes,
Quicksilver in, and I thought he was mishandled in the Avengers movie, you know, mm-hmm, that version of Quicksilver. But the Quicksilver that shows up here, where you get to see him really as a kid, not so much as
right,
the superhero or villain or whatever, and he has that great scene where everything slows down.
Yes.
You get an idea of what it would be like for someone with super speed to sort of, and it's playing Time in a Bottle. That was one of my favorite scenes
yes,
in any movie that year. And they got a lot of that right. I think the only real disappointment with this movie is that it, in an effort to heal the X-Men franchise, it was tearing off strips of Days of Future Past, the comic book story, and
yeah,
kind of bandaging together. Sorry we have to do this, but you know we have to mutilate you to
right,
get this into the shape it needs to be. It was not... That is such a good comic book story
yeah,
that I don't think they quite did it justice. But they ended up with a movie that I thought was entertaining, and I liked the emphasis on Mystique kind of developing her
yes,
as a character and making her really the focal point more so than Wolverine.
Right, right. No, and that's great. And then we come to Apocalypse. And at the end of Days of Future Past, you have that tease scene where you have Apocalypse kind of standing in the desert. Everybody's worshiping and he's essentially building the pyramids, referencing to essentially he's the first mutant.
Being worshipped as a god.
Being yeah, worshipped as a god, yeah. So, yeah, he's being worshipped as a god. His name in the comics, we're just going to do a little bit of brief comic history here before we go into the movie, because I think it's worth noting that there are these huge differences between what's going on in the comics and what's going on in the movies. And I think sometimes the directors take for granted that people haven't necessarily seen, haven't read the comics. And so there are things that they take on faith and assumption that, oh, this is what you should know, and people may not know this. So just, you know, a little quick fact. His human name was En-Sabah-Nur, as much as I can pronounce that name correctly. He's
and
got
Nathan,
yeah.
Was he initially human?
He is, yes.
He is human.
And he was the first one to be found with the X gene. Now, what's interesting about him is his powers kind of grew and developed more and more over the years. And he discovered he had more and more powers as the years progressed and went on. So he had some of these powers that manifested, and then later on, as he got into higher conflict, more of them developed. And he's crazy.
He shows up on the scene pretty well supercharged in the comic books, like in the 80s when he initially appeared.
Yes, before his backstory. So he shows up in the 80s. His first appearance was in the X-Factor, June of 1986. His first full appearance was in July of 1986. So we see kind of glimpses of him in the first one, and then in the second one, he just comes out full force.
So that's interesting. So because a lot of the X-Men villains sort of end up either coming in a big storyline or in like a crossover event. So he just was sort of villain, you know, the villain of the week for an X-Factor episode?
Yes. Okay. And we're going to talk about this a little bit more closer to the end, you know, just kind of staying within the movie concept. But the X-Factor series is actually what that 1992 X-Men cartoon series was mostly based off of.
The one that was on Fox?
Fox,
I think?
Yep.
Yeah, that was good stuff. I remember
it was.
That.
Yeah, it was. I remember going back, I actually have all the whole series. So I've gone back and watched them recently, and it still holds up. I mean, it's still a good cartoon out there.
And if I remember, this is really going back, what, like 92?
I think it was 92.
Didn't it begin with Jubilee? The Sentinels were attacking her home, and she ends up hooked up with Wolverine, and she's the one that ends up at the school. So,
Very first episode, Night of the Sentinels.
Okay.
At that point, they think, I don't think this is spoiling anything, 1992.
I don't think so, no.
At that point, Night of the Sentinels, Morph, they believe, is killed.
That's right.
Yeah. He was kind of you see Mystique showing up later in the series, but he was kind of like Mystique, where he was able to...
Was Morph a comic character?
Yep, he was. But again, following closer to the X-Factor series as opposed to...
I never read X-Factor as much, except when in the 90s when it had crossovers with like Infinity Gauntlet or something like that.
Yep. And they were big crossovers with the Avengers. Jubilee, Beast is captured.
I do remember that.
That whole thing where they were going to bust him out, and Beast, being the cool character he was like, no. We need to show him that we're peaceful. We need to show him that justice works. And
he's like hanging upside down, reading like Sartre or something like that. But I never really got to see that one as much, because I think it was more of a Saturday morning cartoon.
Yes.
But for like the first week it aired, I believe they aired it like in the afternoon.
Yep.
So that was more of a Batman the Animated series kind of guy.
Yep. So and they did good. I mean, they did really they did multiple. Actually, it's funny because I remember going back just recently and looking at some of the titles and things like that. All right, we're getting into it now.
It's over the line again.
That's right. And they have many many different multiple parters in that one. So you have the Phoenix Saga going on in there, and that's like a 4 or 5 part series. You have the Dark Phoenix Saga, which is another 4 or 5 part series. So they have multiple part series.
Pay attention, Brian Singer, multiple pieces,
that's
not everything
right.
at one time.
That's right. But they do have Apocalypse showing up through various places. And it was a well-developed show. You got to see pieces of Colossus coming in and some of his backstory through the comics. You got to see Nightcrawler in an episode with him, which was actually – it was pretty stinking cool the way they handled and treated him and his faith and – an influence that he has on Wolverine, which just blew my mind as a kid watching this show and seeing like, wow, you know, faith actually played a huge part in that particular
episode.
And
that just gets lip service in the movies for the most part.
Yeah.
His faith, I mean, it's handled a little bit better than I would have expected, but there's so much going on in those movies. That's why I kind of was interested to pursue that thought about the cartoon, because I wonder going back, I wouldn't be surprised to find like we spoke about a few minutes ago, the story, I always thought X-Men was a very story-heavy or story-driven yes. comic. That's not true of all of them, but I always felt that X-Men as a title really was.
Yeah.
And seems like the cartoon may have had a lot of that too. The movies aren't story-driven particularly.
No.
I don't find any of them, including this one. So
right. So back to Apocalypse. So, I mean, he's just loaded for bear with abilities. I mean, he's got immortality, telekinesis, telepathy, technopathy.
He's like the best Dungeons and Dragons
character
ever. I know,
really. He is. I mean, this is who you need.
A plus 50 in everything.
That's right. he can warp reality. He can manipulate matter. He can manipulate energy. He has superhuman strength. He has a healing factor.
He's a lazy screenwriter's best friend.
That's right. We are never going to kill this character.
He's the Swiss Army knife of mutants.
So it's funny because, you know, you read all this and you look at the comics and, you know, one of the series deals with Cable because when Cable's introduced, the reason he comes back in time is because of Apocalypse and that whole story arc.
Wasn't Cable primarily one of the New Mutants?
He was, yep. Okay. Yep. And so one of the story arcs in the cartoons, which was cool, is that there's this disease that's taking over, and Apocalypse is trying to unleash this disease on Earth, and Cable comes back trying to stop it, and, you know, they think he's a villain and he's a liar, you know, time travel, future, you got to be kidding me, that doesn't really happen, all that jazz. And so, you know, it's a really cool story arc and storyline. You know, and you can just go on and on. I mean, you know, my recommendation for anyone who's interested, I don't generally tend to recommend Wikipedia, or if I do recommend it, it's
fine night's reading.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's hey, take it with a grain of salt, but actually with a lot of the comic book stuff, I found that it is fairly accurate.
Can you get the cartoons on DVD?
You can get the cartoons on DVD, and I actually have the entire series on DVD. I think you can YouTube some of them.
Now you can buy them on Amazon, or is this like, you know, you've got to get the Russian bootleg?
This is Amazon.
Okay, good.
Yep, this is Amazon, and probably by now, because at the time I got them, they were making them and releasing them individual seasons. So I bet by now you could find the entire season bundled into one package. You know, and if you're internet savvy, you can pretty much pick up and tell what's the Russian bootleg and what's legitimate. Yeah. So, you know, just, you know, be careful when you're on there looking at it.
He's called Das Wolverine. That's probably not the right one.
That's awesome. That's a dead giveaway right there, my friends. So, you know, we see that his history, he starts off in Egypt, and he's actually, as soon as he's kind of coming to power, Kang the Conqueror, who is more of an Avengers crossover, we see his character more in the Avengers than we do in the X-Men. He plays an important part. He knows who Apocalypse is going to be, and he actually sets out to kind of destroy him. And he's taken and hidden, and he eventually realizes more of his mutant abilities and potential and is able to defeat Kang. Well, not defeat him. Kang actually retreats before he can be defeated.
And these aren't spoilers, people, because we don't have any of this in the movie.
That's right.
Though it does start in ancient Egypt.
Okay. So, you know, spoiler alert.
or not.
So, you know, we see a huge thought process in history going back into this. Because he has the ability to take over mutants' minds, he develops the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, who have had many different manifestations going on in their time. So, you know, the Four Horsemen, when you're looking at them, you have death, famine, pestilence, and war, and all of those have been different mutants at one point in time or another. You know, in this particular movie, and this isn't really a spoiler alert because the TV trailer gives this away. You have Storm, you have Angel, Magneto, and Psylocke as his four horsemen. Now, in the comics, only two of those were actually his horsemen, Psylocke and Angel.
Were they the original? Was there an original horseman?
It doesn't. Let me see. There probably was. I'm looking. I'm trying to see kind of quickly. I'm not finding it quick enough for our podcasting episode. It looks like Archangel may have been the first.
Okay, and that was tie in with where the film goes.
Okay, so in the film, he does kind of take him over. First in that series. Is that correct?
Yeah, sort of. Why don't we go ahead and we'll get into the review. And what we can do, you're going to ask me some questions, Nathan, but if you want, I can give just a very basic sort of, not overview of the plot, but just overview of what I thought about the movie and everything. Yeah. So, and then from there, I'll leave it to you. So you can ask questions for everyone who's listening, so we don't get really into too much spoiler territory.
Yeah, that sounds good.
If you're really into the comics, and you probably know a lot of this already, some of what we shared, really, that Nathan just shared, is just preliminary, off-the-surface stuff. It doesn't really touch much into the plot. So you haven't been spoiled yet. You won't be spoiled as we go forward. So I'll just kind of give you mine.
Yeah, give me your thoughts on it. Yeah.
It's very much in keeping with the other X-Men movies, maybe somewhat to a fault, because I feel, as we've been talking about these, I realize that while I've enjoyed most of them to some extent, you know, The Last Stand sticks out to me as one that I really didn't engage much with at all. You know, I believe I got kind of bored with it before it wrapped up.
Yeah.
That hasn't really been true of the others. I've enjoyed them all as basically fun special effects summer movies, but knowing that they're the X-Men, and this might seem silly for anyone who doesn't read comics, and knowing that they can be more, that they should be meatier, more thoughtful, and more interesting, even with the mutant powers, it's been harder for me to sustain interest over them. I think I enjoy Days of Future Past more because it had more going on. There was more interesting ideas put out there. It was a very flimsy version of the story that came before.
Yeah.
But there was still some interest. When I get to X-Men Apocalypse, I'm feeling like Bryan Singer has gotten so comfortable with this series and kind of what he's been doing with it, that where we should have had this great, big, sort of amazing, really full tilt follow-up to Days of Future Past. Days of Future Past now lays the groundwork to go forward. And you have this character Apocalypse, who's this great big villain that we should see almost everybody coming together to, you know, to go up against him. There should be lots of different storylines, I think, regarding the mutant abilities coming up. And this movie, in a lot of ways, feels very small. Now, anyone who knows me thinks most of the time that that's a good thing for me. You know, I always talk about having stories that are more intimate and more character-driven, but that's not what I'm talking about. We do have entire cities laid to waste, and buildings destroyed, and the fate of the world hangs in the balance.
Right.
But it doesn't feel as epic. It doesn't feel as grand. It doesn't even feel as far-flung. Some of that is that the human observation element of the other stories, where you always had the humans interacting some with what the mutants were doing, and the humans either sort of antagonizing the mutants, or the humans being in fear of the mutants. They tied that human factor, I felt, very well in with Days of Future Past, where you were watching Nixon and the others interact, and that whole time period interact with them. The cool thing about the most recent series, you've had First Class, you've had Days of Future Past, and now this, and we've gone from 60s, 70s, now the 80s. The 80s just doesn't really seem to pop in this movie. You have a lot of the songs, but you don't get that feeling of the 80s is this time when big business and, you know, and almost greed is good, as Gordon Gekko, you know, Wall Street said.
Right.
This feeling and this mentality was going around at the time that they characterized the mentality of fear and paranoia, and the characterized the 70s as sort of changing time.
Yeah.
They don't really, the 80s as an entity doesn't play a big part in Apocalypse. So that's the first thing that's kind of weak. The second thing is there's just so many characters coming into this story that you have a hard time keeping track of them. In the beginning, we have more title cards than I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
And it begins in Egypt, so you get a little bit of the character of Apocalypse, who's played in this movie by Oscar Isaac, who we've seen in a ton of stuff. lately. He was in Force Awakens. He was in a really great sci-fi movie called Ex Machina. Mm-hmm. And he's here, but he's, again, this kind of character who's under a lot of makeup. We don't get a lot of his backstory. He is, kind of like you said, this super-powered guy. And he's almost less interesting because of that. This isn't too spoilery, but you mentioned that he takes over mutants' minds in the comic. There's an element of that. But there's also an element that, and he is so powerful that he has learned how to focus all these abilities, that some of these mutants are giving up their free will to him because he offers this doorway to a different world. In the past, we've talked about the humans living alongside the mutants getting rid of the humans getting rid of the mutants. This idea of wiping the slate clean and having just mutants is sort of what Apocalypse could potentially represent to people like Magneto. And to people, and on the other side of that, to people like Charles Xavier, who doesn't want to see that happen.
Right.
So there's a lot of nice character work that goes on, particularly with Magneto in this movie in the early going. We see him really going down a different road after what happens in Days of Future Past. We see that with all the mutants. Mystique is, again, a sort of central figure. Mm-hmm. There's no real single central figure in this movie the way there was with Days of Future Past. And so you have a lot of battles, you have a lot of action scenes, but none of them really stand out. The kind of special effects we see in this movie are not really that interesting. The most exciting scene involves Quicksilver from the last movie, and his scene was the best in Days of Future Past. This is a really fun, cool scene, but it's so similar in some ways to that one that you walk through this whole movie and you don't see anything new. I liked individual pieces of it. I didn't really dislike it, but I was disappointed at the end. I just felt like I'd sat through a couple hours of popcorn action and just really missed this one more than almost any of the other X-Men movies. Misses the real heart, I think, of a story. You just got a bad guy, you've got a bunch of back and forth, and the character threads that were left dangling at ends of Days of Futures Past is still dangling now at the end of Apocalypse. So it's a filler movie, is what it feels like to me.
Okay. So it almost seems like they've done this to try to get to something else, the next movie.
I think it's time for Bryan Singer to maybe let this go and go to something else, because it's like a snake eating its tail now.
Sure.
It kind of feels that way. And I suspect that a lot of fans of the comics might feel that way, particularly because, and we might get into this with some of your questions, some of the stuff in there is really strong and really interesting. He starts to tease the things you really want to see.
Yeah.
And just as he does that, I sit there and I wonder to myself, does he have the capacity to pay them off, which is a complaint you made earlier in this podcast in regards to Cyclops and to the Phoenix storyline.
Yeah.
And that's my big question. I don't know that Singer has the ability to pull off the teases he makes in these movies.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that's fair enough. Some of my questions in relationship to this movie, do we get to see more character development through the people that we already know?
To some degree, yes. Mm-hmm. And in some degrees, no. There are characters here that are sort of kind of left on the back burner. I don't think it's really too much of a spoiler to say that Wolverine is not a prominent character in this movie. Mm-hmm. I won't even really go into whether he shows up or not. If you pay close attention to the last few trailers, you'll already know the answer to that. But this is going to be a more or less Wolverine-less movie. He's not, which in some ways is nice because he has been the focal point of so many of them. It's always nice when we can focus on some of these other mutants, you know, the ones that have actual powers that matter.
Right.
The existing characters that we followed, there are some that are coming back that we knew in the previous movies, their older incarnations, and now we're seeing their younger incarnations. Nightcrawler, you mentioned, comes in. Mm-hmm. They do a really nice job with him. But I thought Bryan Singer did a nice job with him when he was played by Alan Cummings.
Yeah.
And here he's Cody Smith McPhee, I believe, who was the voice in Paranorman, and he was in The Young Boy in the Road. And he does a nice job with the character, but it's just not enough of him there. They bring in two characters that, again, if you watch the trailers, you already know this, that you mentioned earlier you wanted to see more of, which is Jean Grey and Cyclops, yeah. Scott Summers. And as you mentioned, you didn't like, or you were disappointed that they brought in Havoc, but not Scott. So now we have Havoc, who's already there, and he's the established X-Men. And he gets to sort of welcome his brother into the fold. So you get some Jean Grey and Scott Summers interaction, but you also get some Scott and Havoc interaction,
okay,
which is nice. And they start to build that, and you get there Scott's interaction with the Beast, and who's still played by Nicholas Holt, who's doing, I think, sort of a thankless job. He's pretty good at it, but the Beast character is another character who could use a little bit of extra fleshing out in this particular series. We have more stuff with Professor X and Magneto, but their back and forth has kind of grown tired to me. We know exactly where they stand on these issues, and the series keeps teasing, though, that maybe, you know, we all know that they built the school together, and this series is still teasing that maybe we'll still see that, you know? There's always a back and forth. It just depends on which morning they wake up and whether or not they're friends.
Right, right.
So we get some of that, but Magneto stuff is probably the most compelling in this movie. I think that maybe it was a mistake not to make this his movie particularly. I think maybe even have it through his eyes.
Okay.
The stuff with Mystique is cool, but now that Jennifer Lawrence is a bigger star, she's more Jennifer Lawrence than she is Mystique, which doesn't always make sense. You know,
sure.
She walks around in glam mode a little bit more in this movie. And I'm trying to think, as far as characters that came back from the last movie, you do have Stryker shows up again, as you probably expect he will. But again, these are all sort of side players.
Right.
We get the Apocalypse Horsemen that you mentioned. They're pretty neat in the way that they bring them in. I really like the new Storm they bring in, her character. There was a real potential there to do something with her that I think is wasted. And it seems like I'm saying this about almost every character, but it's true. Each one is kind of juicy and interesting, and yet spread over this, which is a long movie. It's a bit over 2 hours. There's just so little of them. There's so much other stuff going on. And some of the big action scenes, quite frankly, they're just not that interesting that we wouldn't rather see some honest-to-goodness character development.
I gotcha. So we are, we're kind of winding down on time here. Last question that I wanted to ask you, you and I get some unique privileges, me through you, of being able to go and see some of these movies for free. And so sometimes, you know, I know for myself, like, that's not such a bad movie, but I didn't pay for it. If you were going to the theater and you were going to pay for this movie, we have IMAX, which is, you know, up to like what, $20 on a Friday night or something like that. If I'm just going to see the regular 2D version of it, you know, I may be paying up to, you know, like $13 on a weekend. Do you think that this is the kind of movie that warrants spending that much money to go and see it in theaters on the big screen?
And that's a good question. I think that's always a good way to come back, particularly when you're recommending things. So let's face it, anyone who's listening to this and has listened this far has listened to us talk about the X-Men cartoon.
That's right.
They're a fan. They're going to see this movie probably regardless. But I will say this. Honestly, I think this is more of a matinee movie. It's the kind of movie, again, I'm not down on it. I enjoyed it. I walked out. I liked it. On the way home, it's when I kind of realized, to me, what a missed opportunity is.
Sure.
And it's kind of frustrating because I don't see it necessarily getting better. So if you lay that aside, I think you'll have fun if you go to see this movie. I am probably a person who's very rarely going to suggest that you see a movie in the IMAX and the 3D, with exception of certain films.
Yeah.
I would say the movie came back out in December, The Revenant, was a beautiful movie in IMAX. I saw this in IMAX and in 3D down at Harbor East, and I don't think either one of those is really necessary for this movie. I think if you go to see this with a bunch of friends and you guys are into the X-Men, why not make it a matinee? I don't really think it's worthy of the full ticket price, personally. I don't think, particularly in a season when we have Civil War, I don't think this movie is quite on the same level at all.
Gotcha. Fair enough. And then just one last question before we sign off. Kid friendly. What do you think a good age range, we've talked about, your young son, Jonathan.
Who's four.
Who's
about to become four in 3 days.
Right, who's about to become four. So probably not something that you're going to take him to go see. But, every family's different. Everyone has different, standards and things like that. But, what age do you think might be a good age to
One of the benefits, I think, of most of the superhero series in terms of gauging that question you asked, that unless there's something that clearly pops out to you, like when we had Deadpool and it was rated R and there was such a deal made about that. Right. I mean, it didn't take a lot of searching to figure out whether Deadpool was appropriate for your child or not.
Right.
Though I've had a few funny stories of kids who got one over on their parents. but I would say that if you've seen the other X-Men movie, that this one is really not any worse than that.
Gotcha.
There's violence. There's a few scenes early on when I did think to myself, hey, I'm glad that Jonathan isn't here watching this, because there are scenes of some of the Marvel movies I'm happy to show him. Like, we've watched Ant-Man together, most mm-hmm. of Ant-Man, because it was kind of playful and fun. That scene in the middle of Civil War where they're all at the airport, I'd be comfortable showing him that. Not so much the rest of the movie because of its emphasis on some of the fallout and the civilian toll that was emphasized in that movie. X-Men, again, it's a movie that I think your 8, 9, 10-year-old, depending on the family and depending on the child, would be okay with. You don't have – I did notice a few out-of-place, like – curse words that go over the line of what you normally hear, you know, that a parent might be uncomfortable with. But I can guarantee you, most kids probably already heard that word in context somewhere.
Right.
It's strange, though. The X-Men movies do seem to throw that one, you know, throw a couple of those
yeah.
more salty words in. They did it in First Class.
Yes.
It was funny,
yeah.
but they did it. So I would say it's about on the same level of that. If you're looking at, like, the Wolverine, the most recent Wolverine, Days of Future Past,
yeah.
there's nothing in Apocalypse that is really any worse than that. And thematically, even though it teases big ideas, it never really gets there. So I think both from a perspective of depth and a perspective of content, you'd be okay staying within that 10 to 13 range.
Very good. All right. We are done. Don't forget to stay tuned. Right after we wrap up here, we're going to go right into another segment on our winners for our contest. So stay tuned for that. And like we said, we haven't got really any response on our closing saying or remark or anything like that. So I think, Nathan, we're just going to end with a movie quote every week, different movie quote. So in honor of the X-Men, to quote Wolverine, I'm the best at what I do, but what I do isn't very nice.
So long, bub.
All right. You just finished listening to Nathan and I talk about the X-Men. Great conversation, Nathan. So glad we were able to do that and just kind of, you know, do an overarching, you know, view of the series from beginning until up to date.
It was fun to go back because I haven't really – some of those movies I haven't really – thought about or seen in a while, so it was neat to kind of look at the whole series.
Yeah, and teased out that the animated series a little bit. So,
and I'm very curious to see what you're going to think of Apocalypse. So,
I
to hear.
I have a friend who he's working for Verizon. They're on strike right now, so he's working overtime. He comes back. I think it's either this weekend or next weekend. He comes back. And he wants to go see it. Well, if it's this weekend, we won't be able to. But if it's next weekend, we'll. We'll make sure we're out there watching it. So,
yeah, it doesn't come out this week. It comes out next
yep.
weekend. So,
yep. So very cool. Well, we got our winners. And what we said was, you know, we were going to take everyone in our Facebook page who's been following us, liking us, everyone in our Twitter who's been liking us and following us, and we were going to take three from each. And so the prizes that we have today are – I'm gonna name the prize, and Nathan's gonna give a brief description of it and choose a winner. We've got our random selector over there, and so we're gonna go with that. So the first prize is the Frey or Frey. So why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about that, Nathan?
Okay, so Frey, it's actually just Frey. This is a graphic novel. It's a graphic novel from Joss Whedon. He's actually involved in the writing of it, and it's a follow-up to Buffy the Vampire Slayer. This is Frey is actually the Slayer from the future. And when Buffy the Vampire Slayer ended, I think in 2003, as a TV show, a few years later, I think in 2009 or 2008, Joss Whedon and company got together and created like the season 8, which was a follow-on story in comic book terms. And through that comic book storyline, Frey came in, I think, when Buffy visited another dimension. So this particular graphic novel is the story of Frey. It's written with all that same humor and sort of pathos that Whedon brought to Buffy. So mm-hmm. it's a great read. It's really good. And that's what we have here, Frey.
Cool. And who do we got for the winner on that one?
Right. I'm going to pull this out of the magic bag, which is actually my daughter's Monsters, Inc. like
nice.
Tote bag.
Nice.
And this is from the Twitter page. And I did a random generator to get that. And then we have about 20 people in here. And I'll pull one name right now. And we have Ron Overton.
Ron Overton.
All right. Congratulations, Ron. You just won a copy of Frey.
Very cool. And so those of you who are winners, I'll say this real quick. If you win, email us. The email, we changed it slightly from the first time we announced it, but it is popcult, C-U-L-T, ninja at gmail.com. Popcultninja at gmail.com. So email us your address, and we'll get that out to you right away.
And if you're on Twitter and Facebook, I'm going to set up an easier way where you can just email us through Twitter as well.
Perfect.
So it'll be that same email that Nathan just gave.
Excellent. So the next prize we have is 42, the Jackie Robinson story. Cool thing about this movie, I was looking at it. The actor who plays Jackie Robinson played Black Panther in Civil War.
Yeah, Chadwick Boseman. Yep. He was Black Panther. He also has played James Brown Jr. recently in a movie, mm-hmm. Get On Up. So, and he will be Black Panther in the upcoming
Standalone.
Ryan Coogler movie. Yep, that's coming up.
Very cool. So,
and this is the
42.
DVD yep. copy. Yeah.
Jackie Robinson. Who do we got as the winner for that?
Okay. J.S. Leary. This is from the Facebook page. So,
okay.
J.S. Leary, you just got a copy of 42.
Very cool. Again, email us your address, and we will get that right out to you. Next, Tales of the Dark Knight comic book.
So this is actually more of a tabletop book, but mm-hmm. It's going back through several decades of the Dark Knight and of Batman, and it's a really cool book with a lot of interesting information. It's a little bit older, but I've gone through it. Looks like a great sort of read, so definitely a cool sort of different item for the tabletop. We'll pull one of those from the Twitter for this one.
Nice. This is live podcasting, folks. Aren't
right,
you excited?
Right. You can hear the paper. Too.
That's right.
So we have Jared Wheeler. You just got a copy of Tales from the Dark Knight. Jared Wheeler.
Very cool. Again, email us. Next, Shawshank Redemption. So this is this Blu-ray?
It is Blu-ray. Yeah, we have a full-fledged Blu-ray right here with some really awesome cover art now that I look at it. It's wrapped and everything, but looks like this is some Drew Struzan cover art. I wouldn't mind actually having the poster of that hanging up. And this is funny because Greg Dutcher from These Go to 11 was just on with Popcorn Theology doing, I think it just released this week, a great overview of this movie, Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, check it out over at Popcorn Theology. Greg Dutcher from These Go to 11, we had him on here the first podcast doing the review of Shawshank Redemption. And the winner for Shawshank Redemption, he's shaking it up good, folks.
Yeah, right,
shaking
right.
it up good.
Kaylee Crawley. So, Kaylee, you just got a copy of The Shawshank Redemption on Blu-ray.
Congratulations, Kaylee. The next one, I almost said number four. It is number four, actually. Essentials, Captain America, Volume 4. This is actually really cool because I was looking this one up before you got here, Nathan. And this one has some really cool story. It's a bunch of different Captain America comics kind of put into one. One of the ones they have in there is Nomad, which is when Captain America kind of decides he's disillusioned with the American government, and he doesn't really want to be a part of it. He doesn't want to be Captain America anymore. And then
that's a newer storyline.
That's a new storyline. Okay. And because of that, we get to see another cool character, Falcon, kind of stepping up on his own and becoming a more prominent character for the first time in the comic book universe.
That's pretty good. You know, guys, actually, I'm going to remove this. I'll read it and then I'll get back to you. So it's a trade paperback. So it's black and white, but it has several different comic book stories in here. It's a great way. I picked it up because of the Civil War movie and thought it would be a great sort of kind of primer for people who's trying to get a back story, some of the back issues or back storylines, classic storylines for Captain America.
Yeah. And so the winner for that one is
Adam Block.
Adam,
you just won a copy of The Essential Captain America.
Awesome. Congratulations, Adam. And then last, we have Essential Art House Ikiru. This is by Akira Kurosawa. Film, again, looking this one up, almost seems remnant of It's a Wonderful Life type story.
It's probably the closest that Akira Kurosawa ever got to a Wonderful Life story, but it's very different. It's a classic movie, and it's a movie that I suspect even people who are really familiar with film may or may not have seen. And because of that, I kind of want to throw something in there, you know, that's a movie you might not have checked out otherwise, but is really, really good. I really recommend this one. And it's different in Wonderful Life because it isn't maybe – I love A Wonderful Life, but it definitely – people who complain about him being sort of saccharine and sort of overly sentimental. Ikiru is a little more genuine in what it's going after. It's a great movie. Kurosawa is mostly known for samurai films like Seven Samurai and Yojimbo and movies like that. Ikiru is a different step in that. It takes place in what would have been for Kurosawa like modern times, 1950s. This is a salaryman who is learning that he's got basically a ticking clock on his life, and he starts to re-examine it in that way. There aren't any magical elements to it. It's a great film. So let's go ahead, and it's the DVD version of this. These Essential Art House are like Criterion. Criterion takes and restores classic movies. So it's a really great print of the movie. Excellent. And the winner for that is Shane Harper. Shane, you just got a copy. And Shane, I actually know Shane from way back in the old Pop Culture Ninja days. So he's resurfaced.
Very cool.
So Shane, you just won a copy of Essential Art House Ikiru.
Very cool. Thanks so much for participating in this one, guys. Now that we've, you know, set out, well, real quick, so don't forget, email us. We are putting that on you. We are not going to chase you down for this. Email us, popcultninja@gmail.com. Let us know that, hey, I was the guy you read as the winner, and here's my address.
Or gal.
Or gal. Thank you. And we'll get that sent out to you. And then, like Nathan said, we'll make it easy for you to just, you know, click on the link on Twitter and Facebook and get a hold of us that way. So our next big contest we're going to do, we are finally on iTunes. Dude, it was like an hour ago that they emailed and said, oh, yeah, you're finally up and ready to go.
And it had to be all that, you know, vitriol you spewed over on.
Oh, yes, that's right.
They heard it and said, get right on that.
Because they care so much about what I think. but we, so what we're going to do is, because we are up on iTunes now, we want you to start following us on iTunes. That's going to be a huge way for you to just instantly get us, as soon as we upload episodes and are able to listen to us. So we want you to start following us on iTunes. And so what we're going to do is we also want to get those iTunes reviews. We are going to hit those early and hit those hard because that is going to be a big way people are going to be able to find us. The good news is I was looking on iTunes. When you type in Pop Culture Ninja, there's not a whole lot of podcasts that pop up. So
there wasn't a Pop Culture Ninja that popped up.
Yeah, there wasn't
every time I looked for it.
But there are some other ones that kind of pop up under that title. So we are the only Pop Culture Ninja that comes up. And so we want those reviews. We want people to be finding us fast and quick. And so what we're going to do is we're just going to up our game. We're going to say, all right, iTunes reviews for 1 week. If you write an iTunes review, we're going to read your iTunes review. We're going to read, your name and you are going to get a prize, and there are going to be some great prizes. We're going to do 5 prizes. So here's the deal. If 5 people write in and send us a review, every one of you will get a prize. If we get 10, we'll do our random generator again, and 5 people will get prizes. We're hoping that in this first week of iTunes reviews to just, you know, blow it out hard. We've got some other really great prizes. I think you have like the entire series of Angel, which is the Joss Whedon spinoff of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, but that's there. We have several seasons of Supernatural, Justified, a couple seasons of Breaking Bad. We have all of Babylon 5. Not sure if you're familiar with that. That was a great sci-fi show. So there's a lot of stuff still there.
Yeah.
Kind of refreshing the loot bin as we go along. And we have several more of these essential trade paperbacks like the Captain America we just gave away. So, and some more Blu-rays as well.
Very cool. So, guys, iTunes reviews, hit it hard this week. Next Thursday when we release our next podcast, we will have the winners for those. So, guys, thank you so much for participating. Thanks for making it a good, strong first couple weeks for us, and let's keep growing. All right. Have a good night.
Take care.
Really shook the pillars of heaven, didn't we, Wang?